Welcome to A Word Fitly Spoken, a podcast about Jesus, His Word, and our joy in following Him. I'm Amy Spreeman.
And I'm Michelle Leslie. Tonight we've got an episode for you that we hope is going to be really informative and helpful. Homeschooling. Now, don't touch that dial, as we used to say, if you don't have school-age children. This is an important topic for every Christian because we all know or are related to or go to church with people who do have school-age children, and we want to be able to help them and minister to them. And if you do have school-age children and your reflexive thought whenever you hear the word homeschooling is, well, I could never do that, give this episode a listen anyway. You might be surprised at what you learn. Now, just to set the stage a little bit, I've homeschooled four children using a wide variety of methods since about 1998. And my youngest is starting his senior year this fall. So by this time next year, I will have been homeschooling for about 23 years. So tonight I personally am going to talk more about the practical how-to aspects of homeschooling.
Oh, thanks, Michelle. And I did not homeschool my kids in the 90s, and I wish I knew then what I know now. So I do have regrets. But since then, I have also done a lot of research, reporting, and interviews with top Christian education experts over the years on, you know, really what has happened and what is happening with public education. So I'm going to be talking about some of the reasons why you should consider homeschooling. And then Michelle's going to talk about actually doing this. So I'm focusing my comments on what's happening in American schools so that those of you listening, if you're listening from another country, bear with me, please. And do let us know what is happening in your public schools where you live. So let's dive right in. Some of you may be painfully aware that our schools have been infected with a radical agenda that is intentional and well thought out, planned, and executed without many of you even knowing it. And that plan was hatched back in the early 1900s, almost 100 years ago. So we've been going down this same path that has led to death and destruction in the former Soviet Union and across Eastern Europe. We're talking about Marxism here, and Marxism in the 20th century was and still is the deadliest and most destructive belief system on the planet. It has a body count beyond measure, and it has left a trail of brokenness, desolation, and death wherever it has taken hold. So I'm going to briefly give you an historical background, starting with what happened after the Russian Revolution of 1917. Now, Marxists in Europe were hoping that the dictatorship model would take over the world. But as you know, that didn't happen in the West. When the revolution failed to spread, a young Italian socialist named Antonio Gramsci wrote that the problem was, surprise, surprise, the Christian bedrock of Western European cultures. So he encouraged Marxists to develop an agenda inside these countries to silently destroy the foundations of Western cultures. Only then would international socialism be achievable. Now, this call to subversion was picked up by Marxist scholars at the Institute for Social Research in Frankfurt, Germany, and this was known as the Frankfurt School. There, they developed the foundations of critical race theory, which we are hearing about today, deconstructionism, and postmodernism. And many of these intellectuals fled Hitler's Germany for the United States, where they were welcomed by progressives and socialist intellectuals. So by the 1960s, these theories began to spread, along with feminism and other isms that we know about when we lived through those, but they spread into every discipline in our universities, colleges, and right down into the public schools to the very youngest students. And by the way, those students are up-and-coming adults now, so you can see what's happened. The lessons at that time, well, they all sounded good, with peace and harmony unifying us all. But what cultural Marxists seek has nothing to do with true diversity, social harmony, or universal tolerance. They don't want the races getting along. They seek power. The solution for the perceived injustices that the cultural Marxists have manufactured is radical social engineering. We're hearing about that now. And only a politically correct elite can remake society along these ideological lines. So if you've noticed that leftists and progressives seem to be the majority among teachers in our schools and at news organizations, well, there's a reason why. The cultural Marxists always seek to enter government, academia, or influential positions in the media, because if you can change the thoughts and ideas of the young people, you can change the world. You might not have any influence over those, you know, stodgy conservative parents of theirs or the grandparents who grew up with liberty, freedom, and the knowledge of why we have such a great constitution, but you can get to their kids. All you have to do is start teaching, start reporting, and then sit back and wait for the remaking of society. So, what's happening today in our schools? Well, little Alex and little Ashley are being taught about sex and gender, or lack of gender, and many parents aren't even aware of it. Planned Parenthood is allowed to come in and distribute pamphlets and condoms. Back in 2011, I wrote a blog post for parents about what's going on with the NEA, National Education Association. Now, back then, the NEA gave a report to the United Nations. Again, this was in 2011. And it has a quote there, and it said, "Oral sex, masturbation, and orgasms need to be taught in education," said Diane Schneider. And she told this to the audience at a panel of Combating Homophobia and Transphobia, and Schneider was representing the National Education Association at the time, which, by the way, is the largest teachers union in the U.S., and she was advocating for more inclusive sex education in U.S. schools with curricula based on liberal, hetero, and homosexual expression. She said, "We must make these issues a part of every middle and high school student's agenda. Gender identity expression and sexual orientation are on a spectrum." Well, and we know that that's being taught today, don't we? She said that those who oppose homosexuality are, quote, "stuck in a binary box that religion and family created." Well, you can imagine what the solution is, right? So let's jump ahead to a few years ago for more examples of the psychological conditioning that's being carried out in America's public schools to promote the ideas of Marxism. Now, you may have seen a few years back a 20-minute video going around in the past couple of years titled "The Story of Stuff." I remember seeing that on Facebook. It went very viral, and it was shown in classrooms across America to grade school kids. So this piece of anti-capitalist propaganda was put together by Greenpeace member Annie Leonard, and it was bashing the American system of capitalism and free enterprise. Now, a teachers union recently produced another video showing rich people urinating on poor people. I'm very sorry for that visual. In the classrooms of America's students, they're being taught that rich people obtained their wealth from poor people by unfair means. Now, this is the Marxist idea that there's only so much wealth available and that this wealth must be redistributed to the poor as a matter of fairness. Students are also taught that American exceptionalism, or the idea that America is a great country, is actually evil. The National Education Association has long had on its website as recommended reading two books by the 1960s Marxist radical Saul Alinsky. The books are titled Rules for Radicals and Reveille for Radicals, and teachers are required to read these. In Rules for Radicals, on page 3, Alinsky writes that the purpose of the book is how to create mass organizations to seize power. On page 10, he writes, "A Marxist begins with his prime truth that all evils are caused by the exploitation of the proletariat or workers by the capitalists. From this, he logically proceeds to the revolution to end capitalism and then into the third stage of reorganization into a new social order of, guess what, dictatorship of the proletariat or workers, and finally to the last stage, which is the political paradise of communism." All right, so after all of that, what do we have today? Today in schools, we have yoga, the Enneagram, and mindfulness taught in the classrooms, the Day of Silence, which is sponsored by the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, also known as GLESEN, and it happens in tens of thousands of high schools each April. On my local schools here, Michelle, without any note to parents, when I was had my kids in schools, a traveling production of the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles came to all the local high schools, not just to sing, but to talk about inclusion and encourage those questioning their sexual desires to pursue a homosexual lifestyle. Just go with it, they told the kids. Today, boys who want to be girls and girls who want to be boys can use any locker room or restroom that they prefer. Young girls are taken by teachers and counselors to abortion clinics without their parents even knowing about it. We have anti-Christian teachings and Common Core, a disastrous curriculum standards model bent on pushing parents out of the education process and making teachers into facilitators for this foul system. And Michelle, I could go on and on. I'm going to put some articles in our show notes today where you can read more about this. So many more examples. These are just some of the things going on in the public school system that should concern us, not just as parents, but as Christians who have parents and kids in our lives that we want to serve and to help and protect.
That's right, Amy. This stuff is really scary. I mean, I went to public school from preschool through the eighth grade in the 70s and 80s. And of course, I'm sure there was some bullying going on between kids, but none of this other stuff. Do you remember anything like that when you were a kid?
None of this. No, definitely we had physical and mental bullying. So you had to be tough to survive recess. But there wasn't the violence that you see today or the sexualization that you see today. And looking back, you know, there were some progressive ideologies that I now recognize, you know, just beginning to creep in at that time, but nothing like what we have today. It's just full-blown craziness. Back then, the majority of teachers and students were actually church-going people who did talk about their beliefs in the classroom. Corporate prayer had already been taken out of the classroom since 1963, which was 5 years before I had entered the system as a kindergartner. So in my school, I just remember we had Catholics, Lutherans, and a couple of Baptist kids, and I was that rare student on the outside as my parents were raising us Unitarian. So I did get teased for it, but that's a whole nother program.
Yeah, I remember right before Easter, my second grade teacher, Mrs. Martin, I remember her reading to my class from one of the Gospels to explain what Easter was about. Even way back then, and at my young age, you know, schools had been so secularized that it really surprised me when she did that, and I still remember it all these years later. So we need to be really careful as parents not to just take for granted that the public schools that our kids are in are basically the same as when we were in school, because things are much worse today. You know, often I'll share a news story on Twitter about something terrible that's happening in a public school somewhere, and I'll say, get your kids out of government schools. And I usually get pretty similar responses. A lot of times I'll get a lot of parents who homeschool, and they're so grateful that they're able to homeschool and their kids don't have to face anything like that. But then they're, you know, non-homeschooling parents, generally the response that I will get falls into one of two categories. The first group of people will say, well, the public schools where I live aren't like that, so I don't have anything to worry about. Well, praise God. I mean, if you've thoroughly investigated, not just assumed everything is fine, but if you've thoroughly investigated your kids' schools and they're really teaching solid academics and wholesome values, that's great. But don't get complacent. You know, a lot of the things that Amy talked about before, they've happened in small, rural, conservative school systems. And if it hasn't happened in yours yet, it's heading your way. So be on the alert. And I also just want to throw in right here that we are not saying that every teacher that teaches in the public school system is a terrible person, or that she's not a Christian or anything like that. Amy and I know for sure that there are some really godly men and women who teach in the public school system. I used to teach in the public school system myself, and I mean, that was in the early 90s. And I think about how difficult it was back then. And so if you're teaching in the public school system these days and you're a godly person and that's your mission field as an adult, you know, my hat is off to you. And, you know, that's really great. What we're talking about here is the government's agenda that they are trying to bring into the public schools. And I know a lot of you as teachers have probably faced the pressure to teach some things that you didn't agree with. And maybe you didn't have to end up teaching it, and that's great. But we're really talking about the kids here. We're not really talking about the teachers, okay? So I just want to throw that in there. So, you know, like I said, a lot of times I'll say something on Twitter about getting your kids out of government schools. And, you know, share a news story. And the first response that I'll get is what I just said. You know, the public schools where I live aren't like that. But the second response that I get most of the time is, well, I just can't afford to homeschool, or I don't have the patience to homeschool, or teaching isn't my gift. So public school is just my only option. Now, I want to get a little real with you tonight, ladies. I totally understand that there are parents who would like to homeschool, and they've crunched the numbers and they have done everything in their power to try to figure out a way to make it work, and they just can't. And, you know, keep listening if you're in that category, because I might say something tonight that would help you to figure out a way to do it. But I also know that at least some of the parents who are giving me this kind of response haven't even made the slightest effort to look into even the possibility of homeschooling. They just assume they can't afford it. And, you know, and I'm going to be a little bit blunt here, ladies. Maybe they don't want to make the effort to be patient, or maybe they don't want to do the work of teaching, or maybe they're scared because this is something new that they've never tried before. Well, I want us to think about something for a minute. If there were a rash of home invasions in your neighborhood, you'd figure out a way to protect your home and your family, right? You'd get an alarm system or a dog, or your husband would sit up nights armed and, you know, protect your home. Or if your child were going hungry, you'd figure out a way to feed her. You'd get a job, or you'd ask your church for help or whatever. Or if your child were sick and needed medicine, you'd find a way to get it or die trying. Now look, Amy just told us about a number of threats to our children's physical, emotional, and spiritual safety. Shouldn't we do everything we possibly can to protect our children? I mean, isn't that the stewardship that God entrusts to us when we have children? It's one thing to try our best and not get the outcome we were hoping for. It's another thing altogether to not even try. So please, that's what we're really asking tonight. Please, for your children's sake, try. Think about it. Research it. Look into it. That's all we're saying and suggesting tonight. How? Well, I thought you'd never ask. If you want to at least start considering homeschooling, here's what I'd recommend. First of all, start praying immediately and continuously. I mean, that's something that all of us can do right now. I mean, you could hit pause on your phone or wherever you're listening to us, and you could start praying right now. Just be sure you tune back in when you get finished praying. You can ask God to provide a way for you to homeschool. Ask Him for the finances you need. Ask Him to point you in the direction of people and resources who can help you. Ask God to give you wisdom and help you think outside the box for creative ways that you can make homeschooling work. If your husband is hesitant, pray for your husband. Every time you run into a brick wall of "I can't," then pray. Matthew 7:11 says this, If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask Him? And James 4:2 says this, you do not have because you do not ask. And that's not to say that God will always give us everything we ask for. It means God wants us to ask Him for everything we need. So ask. All right, so that's the first thing. Start praying and keep praying. Next thing, this is kind of how I like to put it. Roto-Rooter your finances. Give yourself an audit, you know. If you're a two-income family, you're going to have to sit down and look at everything you spend money on to figure out either how to replace the income of the parent who's going to stay home and teach the kids, or how to get by on less money, or both. And there are lots and lots of creative solutions here. And look, I'm putting my lack of money where my mouth is. We've been a one-income family since 1995 when I became a stay-at-home mom. And my husband isn't some rich doctor or banker or anything like that. So we've had to learn how to make it on one income and cut expenses and things like that. So here are some things that I've learned and some things that you can take a look at as you're considering your finances. First of all, you may not have to completely quit your job. Talk to your boss about maybe reducing your hours or working from home. A lot of people have been doing that since COVID hit. So it might be more on his mind right now. Another thing, if you and your husband work shift work, see if you can arrange your schedules around homeschooling. Maybe take turns teaching on your days off. Find a way to bring in income at home. There's so many ways to do this. You could be an Avon lady. You could babysit. You could get paid to homeschool other parents' children along with your own. I saw a really interesting thing on my son's Facebook page the other day. He was posting a suggestion for school teachers who are out of work due to the virus. And he said, you know, if you're a school teacher who's out of work, here's what you could do. You could start a school at your house. You know, you could gather up about 10 kids, charge X amount of money per kid, and there you go. You know, you're back working again. So that could be something you could do. A lot of people are making and selling masks right now. You could do bookkeeping and taxes from your home if that's your strong suit. You could take in laundry and ironing. You could get a job that allows you to work from home. Just think about what you're good at and figure out a way to get paid for it. Ask your friends for ideas. Google it. You know, there's lots of things you can do. And also, there's a book I want to recommend, and it's called Women Leaving the Workplace by Larry Burkett. Women Leaving the Workplace by Larry Burkett. I'll try to remember to put the Amazon link in the show notes for that. Now, it was written in the 90s before the internet really became a thing, but it has tons of great ideas about earning money from home and cutting expenses. And I'll tell you, just reading it really helped me to think creatively about finances and gave me some options I didn't even realize existed. And it's written from a Christian perspective, too. So that's a really good book. And speaking of cutting expenses, cut your expenses. Now, hold on to your hats, ladies. You can turn off the cable or the satellite. It can be done. That's a big expense you can cut out. You can stop ordering in and going out to eat and just eat at home. You can shop at cheaper stores using coupons, shopping sales, buy generic instead of buying name brands at expensive stores. Here's a big one. Stop going to the mall for entertainment shopping or wherever it is you go to do entertainment shopping. Or shopping as a hobby or whatever you want to call it. Buy fewer clothes. Shop for clothes at thrift stores. Exchange hand-me-downs with friends. Stop going to the movies. That's expensive. Mow your own grass. You can sell your house and move to a smaller one in a cheaper area. You can sell your expensive car and get a cheaper one. Or even, you know, if it works for your family, you could even become a one-car family. Another thing is that you can barter. Get with a friend and make a deal. You know, for example, if your husband will change the oil of my car, I'll do your laundry for 2 weeks or whatever. You know, get creative. There are lots of things that we spend money on without even giving it a second thought. And lots of those expenses can be reduced or even cut out altogether if we just get creative, start thinking, and try. Okay, so those are some ways that you can cut your expenses. And you know, not have to spend as much money. The next thing, get some help. There's no reason to reinvent the wheel. Get some guidance from others who have more experience than you do. You can talk to your pastor and ask him to point you in the direction of homeschoolers in your church that you could get advice from, or maybe some local homeschool resources that he's aware of. You can talk to experienced homeschooling parents and ask them their advice on finances, curricula, teaching techniques, and all kinds of things. Just pick their brains. Another really good thing you can do is that you can join a local homeschool organization. We have one here in Baton Rouge called CHEF. I'm not I'm not a member of it personally, but I think it stands for Christian Home Educators Fellowship. So I don't know if that's national or if that's just local, but I'm sure, you know, if you look around, you can probably find a homeschooling group in your area. And, you know, you can join up, ask the other parents questions, get to know them. These organizations also often have field trips, and they organize sports teams, graduations, things like that for homeschoolers. And they should also be able to help you learn what your state and local homeschooling laws are, because we always want to be sure that we're obeying the law. Another thing you can do to get help is get on Facebook and look for a homeschool group that's local to your area. You always want to look for groups that are local to your area, because laws and regulations and even resources differ from state to state, and even sometimes from community to community. So find a homeschool Facebook group. There's lots of great advice to be had in those groups, and lots of times with those kinds of groups and with you know, face-to-face groups like I was talking about before, you can do things like buying and selling used books and curricula, and that'll save you some money too. So there's a lot of good advantages to being a member of a group like that. Another thing you can do to get some help is go to your local library. My library has meeting rooms for community groups, and I'm sure there are some homeschool groups that meet there regularly. At least there used to be. So that's, you know, maybe you could join up with one of those meetings. Also, my library has textbooks in all subjects for all ages that you can check out, educational videos, things like that, that you can use for schooling, and that'll save you some money again. So go to your local library, and then remember, Google is your friend. If you're wondering about something that has to do with homeschooling, Google it and follow those rabbit trails until you find what you're looking for. There's lots of good homeschooling information on how to, you know, save money and things like that out there on the web. All right. So those are some things that you can do, you know, with your finances, getting some help and things like that. The next thing you can do is be sure you consider all of your schooling options. One mistake that homeschoolers sometimes make is trying to recreate the public school environment and schedule in their homes when that doesn't really work for them. But one of the best things about homeschooling is that you don't have to do that. It's extremely flexible. Now, you can do traditional homeschooling where, you know, this is where you order a curriculum, the books, the teacher's manuals, and all of that, and you teach all the subjects to your own children in your own home with a schedule that's similar to regular school. This is mostly what I did, and it worked really well for our family, but we even ended up tweaking that a little bit. We ended up going to a four-day school week. We did it kind of like, you know, how somebody might work four 10-hour days instead of five 8-hour days. It was kind of that idea that we did. But it worked out great. We had a three-day weekend every weekend and only 4 days of school. So that worked really well for us. You could do traditional homeschooling 5 days a week, 4 days a week, you know, whatever works for your family. You could do some form of co-op schooling. Usually this involves several homeschool families getting together with, you know, with each parent teaching a different subject to all of the kids. Or sometimes, you know, a church member, a friend of a parent, or a community member will volunteer to teach a certain subject. Some co-ops meet every day. Some of them meet once a week. Some of them are free. Sometimes there's a little charge for it. it just depends on the group. It varies from group to group. Another sort of form of co-op schooling is that you could teach other people's children along with your own for pay. Or you and a friend could get your kids together and trade off teaching every other week. Or you could teach English and history and she could teach science and math or something like that. when I was homeschooling, when my kids were smaller, there were a lot of families in our church who homeschooled. And the father of one of the moms had been a high school coach and PE teacher. And so he had a lot of experience with that. And so we all got together and had him teach a PE class once a week for the kids. And it was a lot of fun. The kids liked getting together and you know, having sports and playing together, and the moms enjoyed fellowshipping together while they were doing that. And so that was something that we did that was sort of co-op-ish. Then we also had once a week we would meet at the park and play and things like that. So there are lots of things that you can do that are sort of a co-op kind of idea of teaching. Another thing you can do, and I know we're talking about homeschooling, but private Christian schooling kind of falls under that umbrella sometimes as far as homeschooling goes. And you might think that a private Christian school is out of your reach financially, but it never hurts to check it out. Some private schools, especially smaller ones, are very flexible. Some of them offer scholarships and financial aid. Some of them will allow parents to work for the school in exchange for tuition. Some of them will even allow homeschool students to attend part-time and even participate in their extracurricular activities and clubs and things like that. When my daughter was about in the seventh grade, we had always planned to put our kids in a Christian school when they hit about middle school age. It didn't always work out that way with all of the kids, but that's how we started out. But anyway, when she was in the seventh grade, we were going to a little church that had a small Christian school. And so I had this idea of putting her in school part-time for the seventh grade, you know, to kind of ease her in and get her used to being in school because she'd been homeschooled all of her life. And so I just went up and talked to the headmaster about it. And they agreed to allow her to attend school for math and science, and then I taught her English and history at home. So it never hurts to go in. Even if the Christian school doesn't state on their website or their materials or whatever that they offer things like financial aid and part-time homeschooling, things like that, it never hurts to set up a meeting with the headmaster and just talk about it. Maybe they've never thought about offering any of those things before, you know, and you could give them a good idea. Just, you know, one more thing, make sure you thoroughly vet the school's theology first. You do not want to jump out of the frying pan of public school and into the fire of a supposedly Christian school that teaches false doctrine. So be sure you check out any Christian school that you are going to use. And then, you know, another option, maybe you want to go the traditional homeschooling route or the co-op school route or something like that. But you weren't so great in one particular subject as in school, so you don't really feel like you would do a good job of teaching it. Well, first of all, let me tell you this. I learned so much more material teaching my kids than I ever learned when I was a student myself. So, you know, if you're a little scared, maybe read ahead in the teacher's book a little bit and, you know, maybe you'll do okay. But, you know, if you're still a little apprehensive, you can look into a private tutor for that particular subject. Your local library is a good place to look. I know that at my local library, there's a lot of tutoring going on all the time. And they leave flyers out on the table and things like that. So you could look around and see if there are any flyers for tutors at your local library. If you're in a college town, try contacting the education department at the local university. Explain your situation. Ask if they have any good students in whatever subject you're looking for a tutor in, and ask if they have those good students who would like to earn a little extra money tutoring. I mean, you might even find out that they've got a tutoring program already set up to give their students some practice in teaching. And, you know, when you get your kid a tutor, maybe you could sit in on the lessons, and, you know, maybe it wouldn't be your worst subject anymore. You might learn a lot too. And then finally, online school might be a good option if you can find a good one. It's kind of like going to school on Zoom, kind of like that. So I know some parents are familiar with that already because of quarantine. But there are online Christian schools and there are online public schools, and I'm sure some of them are very good. I will say that with two of my boys, I did traditional homeschooling with them up until middle school. Then we put them in a private Christian school for a couple of years, and there ended up being some problems with that. So we pulled them out of that, and we tried an online public school for about a year and a half. And my kids, who were at the top of their respective classes, both at home and in the private school, and, you know, both were academically above average, they went, when they went to online public school, they went from A's to D's and F's in online public school because of the immense workload, Common Core, and some other issues. We did not find that the public online school we used was teaching any of the sexual stuff or social justice or any of the other things that Amy was talking about earlier. But that was a few years ago, so I don't know if that's still the case or not. So that's something to look into. Just be very, very discerning about whatever online school you might choose. So those are some options for schooling. And then finally, and this one's not optional, but finally, trust God. Trusting God is really your only option as a Christian, even if you're not homeschooling, but especially if you are. Trust Him to provide the finances you need, the materials you need, the help you need, the patience you need, the grasp of the material you need. Just trust Him for everything. Trust Him, trust Him, trust Him. Well, I could go on and on all night, but I think that'll give our listeners who want to look into homeschooling a good place to start, where they can at least start considering it and thinking, well, maybe this isn't so scary after all, or maybe I really could afford it if I tried, or, you know, maybe. So I think that'll give them a good place to start thinking. Amy, is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, my goodness, Michelle, why didn't I meet you 20 years ago, my friend? I'm sure back then you would have told me as well, Amy, try, just try. And my life and my children's lives may very well be different, and we would be in a different place right now. So ladies, if you're listening and you've been inspired by this, praise God. You know, as we have seen in the past several months, there is a radicalized agenda that will educate and radicalize your children if you don't do something. So let's do something. Let's train up our kids in what's right. And as we wrap up tonight, if you have been encouraged by this or any other episode of A Word Fitly Spoken, you can share that encouragement with others by leaving us a positive review at iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you listen to us. That really helps boost the ratings, I guess. And, you know, not that we care about that, but what it does is it gets the Word of God and into places where it might not be otherwise. So you can also boost that visibility by sharing our posts on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well.
Yes, please help us get the word out about A Word Fitly Spoken. And until next time, teach your children well and walk worthy.